Next question is from Texas. We are a successful advisory team here in Dallas, and we really want to grow. How do we find more clients like the best ones we now have? How do we replicate our best clients? They don't seem to want to give us many referrals.
Well, this is common in this economy, and it's common in this market. And frankly, it's been common for years. The reality is that, you know, if referrals were such a good engine, then why is it that people continue to struggle? The truth of the matter is, first and foremost, that people are reluctant to give referrals. Why? Because, number one, they aren't qualified to qualify anyone. Secondly, they don't know who in their network of people they know or in their community are not happy with their advisor or even is considering making a change or perhaps even needs to make a change. So what I would suggest to you is to recognize that it's not about growing by getting referrals and hoping that you get a referral from your best clients. I mean, hope is not a strategy. Schwarzkopf told us that back in the first Persian Gulf War. The reality is what you want is a warm introduction. And the way to get a warm introduction is put together a list of 10 or 15 people that your top clients likely know. This might be people in their association, might be people in their country club, might be people in their cultural or religious organization. The reality is whatever market that your best clients are in, based on how they network and communicate with others, put together a list of 15 people and meet with them and say, here are 15 people we'd like to meet. Who do you know? Which ones know you? Now, the beauty of that is if you Google these people that you're putting on the list, do some research about them, it is unbelievable how crystal clear it becomes that these are great prospects for you. And then by getting an introduction, then you can begin the sales conversation with these individuals. So to help you, I would encourage you to really watch in the Accelerate Your Growth course, take class number 10, Acquiring Referrals and Warm Introductions. Because in reality today, if you really want to grow, the quickest, fastest, easiest way to get there is leverage the best clients you have right now. Because by them giving you a warm introduction, it really breaks down a lot of the walls, a lot of the resistance going in the marketplace. And never forget that only you as an advisor, only you as a team, really know and can qualify the individuals with whom you want to do business. It absolutely does not fall in the bailiwick of a client to figure out who you should be doing business with. All their role is to give you a warm introduction to the people you want to meet in their network, people you pre-qualified. Thanks, Dick.
Thanks, Richard. Next question from South Carolina. We think we've created a good value promise, but it does seem to be a bit long. And the individual goes on to quote the value promise that they've come up with, and it reads as follows. We are a very experienced financial advisory team that has a six-step process to help people invest in the market and manage their finances so that they have opportunities to manage risk and maximize returns, close quotes. Any thoughts, Richard, on how to tighten this up?
Well, let's begin at the beginning. The unique value proposition, or as I like to call it, unique value promise, is firm or team-centric, period. Everything that you reiterated, Dick, it's all about what they do and how they do it.
Right.
None of that is compelling to anybody. I mean, the reality is it's so merchandising, firm and team-centric, that, and even in some cases, some of the words you used are process-centric. The truth is you must uncover the unique value promise that you're going to make, and the way you do that is you meet with your clients and uncover it, and then you craft their input into a unique value promise so that other people are captivated by your promise, they are motivated by your promise, they are interested in your promise, and they quickly think, wow, how did they do that? The most important thing is your unique value promise must be authentic, and it must be from their perspective. If it's so, then it's unique to you, distinct in the marketplace, hard to copy by others, and it compels people to inquire. And maybe, Dick, at this point, I'll just interject for all of you from the Weilman Center that are listening to this town hall meeting and participating. On Saturday, August 20th, and then Sunday, August 21st, it's a day and a half in Tampa, Florida. I am doing my day and a half retreat workshop on clarifying and communicating your real value. As I always do, it's limited to only 40 people. It's going to be at an airport hotel, very close, to make it easy for everyone. The registration fee includes everything except your airfare and your hotel room. But I would encourage you, absolutely encourage you, to really consider coming to this conference. There's pre-work involved, but the important thing is when you leave this conference, you will not only have an opportunity to know what your distinct and unique value promise is, but you'll really clarify your value, and it'll get you out from under fee pressure, and it'll really get you focused on working on purpose, not on, quote, pressure. Probably the right thing to do here, Dick, just call our office. It's 1-800-535-4332, 1-800-535-4332, and talk to Terry, who, as many of you know, is my vice president of marketing. She does a brilliant job. That's Saturday, August 20th, and Sunday, August 21st. Fly in Friday night. We start at the crack of dawn on Saturday morning. My entire team, all my top coaches, Dick, you'll be there. And this is a highly interactive workshop to help us move you along. But the most important thing is here is this value proposition, as they put it together, is exactly that, a proposition. They're selling. The truth is, make it a value promise. Make it about the promise you're making to the client. Make it client-centric, prospect-centric, not, shall we say, firm and offering-centric. Dick?
Yeah, such an important concept, and one that can really help define being distinct and unique in this marketplace. And, yes, great answer. Great question, too, by the way. That was that really triggered a lot of response from Richard. Next question. We have a good sales process that focuses on discovery. Then we recommend solid solutions. Our challenge is even when we talk at length about the product features and benefits, for some reason, people just seem to want to put off solving their problem. We can't decide why they procrastinate. Do you have any insight into why people put off decisions and procrastinate?
Well, let's talk in a general sense because it is somewhat general, but I would say this, two things. Why do people put off decisions? Typically because they're unsure of value. And when they don't understand the value, then what do they do? When anyone is confused, they simply don't make a decision. They put it off. Or if they don't see that you really are focused on them as an individual, but more importantly, you're focused on yourself and your attributes and your credibility and your education and your process, the reality is that there's no emotional or functional connection to them. So what do? They put off the decision. So what I would suggest to you to solve this problem, which is really the basis of your question, why do they procrastinate? Do I have any insight in why they put off decisions? They put it off because they're unsure of value. So perhaps you're speaking at too high a level. What I would do is probe more deeply. I would absolutely do a deeper discovery. Ask them, what are three things that you're most concerned about? And then I'd ask them why, so you get the emotional connection to those, quote, three things. I'd ask things like, what are three things that you wish were different with your current advisor? And you'll get a revelation knowledge. And then you can ask them, well, why are those things important to you? Again, more deep, shall we say, discovery uncovers opportunities for you then to reframe the discussion. And by the way, when you get into these discussions about what you do and how you do it, make sure that you just don't state all of these features, if you will, this what and how of you. Make sure that you don't leave anything to chance. In other words, let me give you an example. Instead of just saying, well, we're going to put together a comprehensive plan with 8 steps to it, well, that sounds great, but guess what? That's what everybody says. What you need to say is, we put together a comprehensive plan with 8 steps to it, and what that means to you, now give them an advantage. What that means to you is we're going to organize all of your assets in a tax-efficient way, and the long-term benefit is you'll have the retirement that you deserve. That's the way to approach this. In other words, don't leave value up for them to discover. Make it crystal clear and make the bridge what this means to you. Because then you personalize and humanize somewhat your standard features, what and how you do, but you do it in such a way that they immediately emotionally connect, functionally connect, and that takes away a lot of the confusion. It clarifies value and advances the process. Dick?
Thank you. Very specific question from a member in Seattle. It says, I want to work in a local charitable organization here in Seattle. Can you give me some real do's and don'ts to make sure that I don't misfire?
Well, first let me say I'm proud of you. The reality is that the, shall we say, charitable, cultural, those types of, things that are important or special interest to individuals is an amazing way to meet a variety of people that network and communicate under a common cause. The key is to position yourself as someone who is giving not to get, but is someone who is giving to give again. And when they begin to perceive this, that you're just not there with your automatic business card wrist shooter strapped on, but you're there with the mindset that, you, number one, you have a passion for the same organization. Two, you have a passion for the outcome they're trying to, quote, accomplish. And you're there to give of your time and give of your treasure, and they will spot that. So the reality is they see that you're giving, to, and that in turn gives you an opportunity to give again and really become part of the network. So just some tips. Most importantly, be open to serve. That's important. Don't just show up. Be open to serve. Serve on committees. I'd stay off of boards. That way you can rub shoulders with the very people with whom you want to do business over time. Be supportive of others. In other words, don't go in there to be critiquing how they do it. Dick, you and I both remember a team we coached and basically blew up their charitable organization because this guy went in there and gave them a litany of things they were doing incorrectly with the money of the charity. I mean, is that really the right approach? The truth is, be gracious and be considerate. You can opine not to change. You can opine. Tend to your opinion anytime you want to. But opine not to change, but opine guide them forward. That's the key, to guide their thought process going forward. Very important. Now, this is a massive topic. On the Wyoming Center, there's a course that I produce called Gaining High Visibility Through Cultural, Charitable, and Community Involvement. I would encourage you to take that course. In about 40 minutes, you will have not only step-by-step how to be a resource, how to be able to really move yourself forward effectively. It will also teach you how to be able to transition from meeting people to meeting with people. So at the appropriate time, you can help the individual members of this organization become clients of yours, not by being there to get, but by being truly a resource, truly transparent, and being authentic. So I'd encourage you to take that course, Gaining High Visibility Through Cultural, Charitable, and Community Involvement. Dick?
Thanks, Richard. We have a few more questions, and then after that I am going to open it up so that if any of you have additional questions or comments on what's been said today, Richard will be available to take those as well. But we do have a few more that have been sent in, Richard. The next one is from New England. I'm in charge of recruiting in our Boston office, and even though I have interviewed several good potential candidates, we can't seem to get them on board, particularly the Gen X and Gen Y candidates. Any insight about what they are actually looking for?
Great question. And clearly, there's no doubt that if you look at baby boomers and you look at X's and Y's, they are completely different in terms of how you approach them and what they're looking for. The reality is, if you're going to be effective, Gen X and Gen Y candidates require you focus on what they want and how they want to hear about it. That is key, absolutely key. Let me just give you an illustration. Baby boomers, you know, the facts are strong work ethic, competitive, you know, generally positive, purpose-driven. But the reality is Gen Xers and Ys, they come from a different perspective. Xs, they're fast to adapt. They're fast to learn. They're technologically savvy. They want clear and direct communication. They love the excitement of winning. So when you're going to approach them, here's what they want to hear about things like, being their own boss, balance in their lifestyle, big topic with Xers. Your leadership style, is that hands-on or hands-off? They want hands-off, by the way. They want to hear about the support you're going to give them, particularly the training and the systems you have in place. And they're very, very interested in rewards, both individually and as a team. When you get to the whys, they're different. They are have a relentless pursuit of self-development and improvement. Self-expression is far better to and more important to them than self-control. They're concerned about their role. They're concerned about their image in the community, in their network, on Facebook, et cetera. But I think in the larger sense, the whys really want to make a difference. So they want to hear about things like, you know, with whom will I be working? You know, am I going to be doing joint work? And if so, what are the growth opportunities? And how am I going to market and transition to sales opportunities? They're very, very concerned about that because they're that influences their image in the community. And the reality is they want to make a difference, but they want to hear about the benefits of doing more and achieving more because that just motivates them to not only be in the business successfully, but to grow the business long-term profitably. Let me just encourage you, again, back to some coursework, recruiting quality people in the management suite. Take, I believe it's class number 6, which really deals with the generational differences and how and what the best approaches and messages should be to be able to move people along. I think that'd be very helpful for them. And Dick, I know you're coaching a lot of management teams as well that are moving down this genre. I think you'd agree that that's just a great place to in coursework to help you understand the differences and the distinct approaches that must be taken with each of these various generations.
Yep, great starting point.
All right, okay, what else?
Next question. Yep. Matt from Kansas City writes, how do you feel about elevator speeches, Richard?
Well, okay, let me be kind here. I'll just say this. Whoever thought this up? There are even books written about the elevator speech. I mean, really, is that the goal? Get them on the elevator and take people down in the elevator. What a concept. I mean, it's just, it's inane. The truth of the matter is that people have been told to put together, you know, a paragraph that you can say in 15 seconds about what you do, how you do it, who you are, and what you're all about. Is this compelling to anyone? The truth of the matter is the only way you're going to capture people's attention is with your unique value promise. Why? Because an elevator speech is all about you, but of a unique value promise is all about what people want to accomplish and can accomplish through you. So the reality is when you have a unique value promise, I mean, look at ours, I mean, you know, elevating your value to drive business success. People ask me all the time on airplanes, well, so what do? They're expecting I'm a consultant, I'm a coach, I'm a speaker. You know, they're expecting something that defines what I do. But what I do is I, in my brain, I don't want to use an elevator speech. What I want to talk about is what I do for people like you, and that's where the shift comes. So I always say, when they say, what do? I was flying the other night home, and this guy sitting with me turns to me and says, so what do? I said, well, I own a consulting firm, and we help organizations elevate their value to drive business success. And literally his jaw dropped. He said, really? How do you do that? How do you elevate value? And I just said, well, tell me, what are some three reasons why I should be doing business with you? What is your value? Well, we've been in business for 25 years, and, you know, I have a lot of expertise in the engineering, and it was all about him. And I just said to him at the end, I said, it sounds great, but it sounds like it's all about you. A bit of an elevator speech, wouldn't you agree? And he was like, yeah, it sure sounds a lot different than what you said. And then he just sat there for a minute. He said, so how can I fix this? How do I come up with a statement like you have? Well, the reality is it really is uncovered through his clients. It's a bubble up. One of the things we're going to talk about at the retreat in August. So my point to you is simply this, that what do I feel about elevator speeches? The reality is it's not about an elevator speech. When people say, what do you do? It's not what do you do as a occupation. Rather, change your mindset, and it's what do you do for people like them, and reiterate your unique, authentic, owned by you value promise that you make to people like them. Go ahead, Dick.
Great. Here's the last question.
I had to bite my tongue on that one.
Yeah, you controlled yourself well, Richard.
Yeah, it gets me crazy.
I know that's a hot topic for you. Last question that was sent in. Your marketing tips continually reinforce the idea that it's important to focus on the people and have a structured communication plan with them. Don't you think, though, that the financial performance is the only real thing that people care about in the end?
Great question. And performance, let me be very clear here, is very important to people, no doubt about it. But I will tell you point blank, it is not the only thing. In fact, it's way down the list for most people. People have moved their assets to other advisors. They bought insurance from other firms. They have moved their banking, not because of performance. Performance is important, but it's important only after people recognize and sense that you are communicating in a structured and committed way. Performance is important only after they feel like you understand their issues. It's important from a standpoint of a hierarchy. It's well down the list from a sense of direction that you give. It's well down the list with a sense of structure and belonging that you create with them. It's even further down the list than responsiveness to their inquiries or the creation of a plan to help them get what they want. Once you look at the hierarchy of communication, understanding, sense of direction, sense of structure, responsiveness, creation of a plan to help them get what they want, only then is performance important to them. And most importantly, if you do an outstanding job on the soft skills, on the relational skills, the truth of the matter is you then are proactively helping them to manage their portfolios, to manage their financial life, so that you are not just tied to performance, but you have a holistic approach to the relationship. And thus, you're in a position to proactively help them make adjustments in their portfolios so that they are not exposed and thus take a hard hit on performance, particularly if you manage their risk. And speaking of managing risk, let me just close by saying this. So many advisors always want to focus on what to buy and when to buy. The reason performance is an issue is for that very, 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 shall we say, clear focus by advisors. What to buy, when to buy. Performance is never an issue when you really position yourself as someone that helps them understand when they should sell, because that takes the risk factor of performance. It doesn't mitigate it, but it manages it. And being static, it's important to keep that in mind. Okay, Dick?
Great. Thank you, Richard. Well, that concludes the calls that came in, but as I said earlier, I'd now like to open it up to callers on the line. If you've heard something today that's kind of triggered an idea or you want to do a follow-up question, what questions do you have? Anybody on the line, feel free to ask Richard at this point. Who wants to go second, as Richard says? Sounds like, Richard, you might have covered the territory with those we have on the line. Anybody have a question?
All right. Well, let me then close with this by just simply saying, first, thanks for joining us. Secondly, thanks for your membership in the Wildman Center. I'm delighted that you not only are going forward with your business and you've made a determination to invest in yourself, invest in your business, and grow your business to the next level. The most important thing is to recognize that everything you learn, and whether it's from the coursework, from the support tools, even from these calls that we do, it's really important to recognize execution is everything. Because as my good friend Jim Rohn said, to know and not to do is just as good as not to know. So it's critically important that you execute that which it is that we've talked about. We look forward to seeing you on the next town hall meeting, which is about 3 months out, as I recall. And we'll be having a call for questions then, just like we always do. and an opportunity for you to pick these up. I will mention also, and Dick, I think I'm correct in this, this has been recorded and will be loaded onto the Wildman Center so people can listen to it at their leisure or go back and listen to explanations that I've given to be able to glean that which it is that they want to utilize in their practice. Am I correct?
You're correct. And also, I was just going to encourage people to, if you haven't visited the Wildman Center recently, there are a lot of new resources on there to help you with your client acquisition and your marketing. So it's a great place to visit and see the changes and additions that we put on. So let's I think that concludes it today. Appreciate you joining us. The next town hall meeting will be in September, and we'll let you know the exact date and time. Thank you for joining us all. Be well.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.